You may.
How many folks were here last week? Not a test, find out who's bad. The ones that are here don't matter than anybody else. No worries either. But last week's gospel lesson was from Mark. And if you recall, it had all the stuff leading up to and then following this feeding of the multitude and also the walking of the sea. It was left out last week. Well, we found it. If you jump right out of the Gospel of Mark and moved over to John's Gospel, and here we have it today. Much embellished, I might add. We have the addition in there that's also known as the Sea of Tiberias. We have a little boy bringing the loaves and the fish, even the specific kind of bread that it is. We have Jesus not going up to the mountain to pray, but he's already there on the mountain. And the crowds are following him, not his disciples. And then that curious thing at the end when they're struggling against the waves and Jesus comes to them. It's almost as if they anticipated his arrival. It says, and he had not yet come to them. So they had apparently read what was in Mark and were ready for this stuff to come. We get little hints like that occasionally in the gospel lessons where it becomes obvious that one gospel writer relied heavily upon other gospel writers. Mark happened to be the first gospel that was written. And John's gospel was probably not written for another 40 years after that. So they didn't know what was written. And Jesus didn't calm the storm in this story. Perhaps calm their hearts by telling them, don't be afraid, it was I. And before he could get in the boat, they found themselves already. I really don't want to talk about any of that. We've heard the story of the feeding of the 5,000 so many times. I've heard so many explanations about what's really going on here. For a long time, I was convinced that it was really a story about hospitality. And it may very well be. The whole notion of that many people making a journey to go be with Jesus, to walk around the sea and not taking provision for them. And that's just, I bet if we went out in the parking lot now and went through everybody's car, we would find snacks. Now some people don't allow snacks in the car. But some of you have them. I've seen them. And I bet we all have lunch. And we didn't come that far. I had a piece of zucchini bread lathered in cream cheese on my way from Doylestown to here this morning. And, I didn't really even need to take provisions with me. There was a Wawa. Well, folks, in Jesus, they didn't have benefit of the Wawa. So it's unlikely that they would have gone anywhere without provisions. And yet, the question before us, before them, is where are all these people going to be? I've always liked the notion of the real miracle of the story was that something happened to the crowd that allowed them, moved them to reach into their backpacks and pull out their Snicker bars and their hands of sand, whatever else they might have had, and began to share it with one another. Perhaps just because a small child that hadn't yet learned about being selfish, about being fearful of what people might take from it, about hoarding, so that I let the crowd share
Is that what happened?
Who knows? But it's a good story or an explanation. And frankly, I think it's more miraculous to change the human heart, become generous and hospitable. It's a lot more miraculous than just somehow being able to duplicate bread, fish, and horns. The part of the story I'm really struck by is where it says that when Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king, that he withdrew. They were going to take him and make him king. Well, we had heard last week about the king they had, King Herod, who wasn't much to write home about. And so if anybody would have been a welcome replacement for him. And there was this hope in Israel at that time that someone would come, a Messiah would come, and this would be a military leader, a political leader, who would release them from the tyranny and oppression of Rome and restore the dignity of the king of Israel. Restore the dignity of the house and lineage of David, of which Jesus, of course, was a part. The house and lineage, the respect of David. Remember that first lesson? Again, not something that you would write home about and say, hey, Mom, I met this guy who's a king. The great King David, who is an example for all of Israel. Never had there been a king greater than David, anointed by God. We see in this story of Bathsheba and her husband Uriah. The list of abuse, of power, the list of sinful behavior, the list of just not being a nice guy goes on. Where to start? You know, where did David really make his mistake? I'm not there and ask you to respond. Frankly, he made his first mistake in becoming king. Remember, old Samuel would say, Israel, you really don't want a king. You don't want a king because they'll end up doing you wrong. And he did. Even the weakness. Even the greatness. Somehow it all begins to infect us to this thing called power. And we begin to think that the rules no longer apply to us. And so David looks upon Bathsheba, the signs that he wants her. Not unusual. It happens all the time. He doesn't always get acted upon.
When a king, as some might say, that's what being king is for.
To have what you want, to take whatever you want. And people are generally somewhat happy to give.
And that's the irony of this whole story. David could have simply gone to Uriah and say, Uriah, I want your woman. And Uriah would have had no choice but to say she's yours. Done. Or when Uriah
done, he could have said, Uriah,
I'm sorry.
Can you imagine? I can't apologize. I did do wrong. And somehow I'll make it this way. Okay?
But no,
he doesn't do that. He tries to cover his original sin by deception,
that he can somehow
sneak out and away from this situation that he's created for himself.
When that doesn't work, he does what
rulers have done since the beginning of time. They either advance their position,
they protect themselves from their enemies, either by war or by assassination, or both. After all, the lesson began by saying it was, what, time that kings go to war? So war was in the air. David takes care of business at the expense of Uriah the Hittite. And so all the history of Israel, all the great and the horrible things that were part of the history of the lineage of King David all come into play because of this mistake, this accident, this willful choice to add sin on top of sin. And Jesus said, I don't think I want to be your king. I don't think I want to be your king. You see, there's a difference in how men and women usually make use of power. And Jesus is attempting to show us a different type of power. A power that's not about control, but a power that has to do with being responsible in a loving and caring way. Jesus responded to people who were in need. He healed them. He brought them comfort when they needed it. He afflicted them when they were too comfortable with the truth. And he fed them. He fed them, sometimes whether they were hungry or not. But he did not use this power that had been given him by God for his own purposes, for his own comfort, for his own pleasure. And that's the difference between God and human beings. Every time we take whatever power that we might have, and we all have some, even the weakest among us has some power, if only a power to say, no, I'm not going to participate in that. The power to steal away, the power to walk away, the power to choose to turn all of that over to the ruler of our lives and the universe. There's power in that. Because it's hard to control. It's hard for someone else to control that sense of freedom that we have to not be swayed by the power that others would exercise over us. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You've heard that 1,000 times. And we have an example of it in the great King David. What we will hear later is that the prophet Nathan will confront David, and David will see the error of his ways and repent. And that's worth something. That's worth a lot of action. To acknowledge the ways in which we have made mistakes. As we look at the power God has given to us, the ability that God has given to us. The question is, are we generous with those powers, with those abilities? Or do we use them, hold on to them, hoard them, like perhaps the people were of their food when they were fearful of what was all around them? Have you ever thought that?
You ever had something and you thought,
what if everybody knew I had this? What if the church treasurer knew I had so much money? He might be asking me to increase my wage. What if somebody knew that I had a lot of time on Thursday afternoon and they might ask me to volunteer in the church office? What if they, and so we keep that quiet? Because we're afraid that people will take something from us. If we don't realize the power that we have to say, no, I can't do that. No, I can't do that. And the power to say yes. Probably is a story, this feeding of the 5,000, one of hospitality and generosity. It is one that deals with scarcity and abundance. And we're always talking about scarcity. There's never enough, right? We always talk about how we don't have enough people. We just did Lobster Fest. We didn't have enough people to do that. I mean, we had a lot of people, but there's never enough people. Hal Seward's coming up. We need a lot of people.
Then we'll have cookie bakes.
And there's all these things that we do around the church and beyond the church. And we're always focused on not quite having enough. And then there's the money part of it. What if we don't have enough money to, you know, and we're aware of what we've done. But what Jesus reminds us is that there's an abundance out there. We just haven't found it yet. Because it begins right here in our hearts.
Preacher comes out one Sunday and says, that's bad news. Real bad news. The roof is about to fall. Everybody's like, ooh. He said, but I have some good news. There's enough money to fix it. But I've got some bad news. It's all in your minds. There is abundance. There is an abundance among us. May the power of God that we see in Jesus bring that forth in us. Let us use that power for good, generous reasons. Not let it spoil us and turn us into those who would seek to control and to dominate, to abuse with that power that God has given us. I pray that we may have the power to comprehend with all the saints, what is the breadth, length, height, and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that we may be filled.